I'm Georgie Crawford. You're listening to the Good Glow podcast. Over the last year, during my treatment for breast cancer, I've realised the importance of self-care. Whether it's a visit to the gym, a checkup with your GP, or even a 5-minute meditation, the time has come for us to put ourselves higher on our own to-do list. Over the next few weeks, I'll be talking to people who inspire me, remind me to take better care of myself, and people who I believe you, the listener, will benefit greatly by listening to. I'm so delighted to be joined today by my friend and best-selling author of Owning It and The Confidence Kit, Caroline Foran.
Thank you so much, Georgie. I'm so happy to be your guest.
I'm just so excited to talk to you for an hour because I haven't seen you.
We haven't had this chance in so long.
Yeah, I haven't seen you since I got sick. Yeah. And, you know, obviously we've been on to each other loads. So it's really good to have this time to just sit down and have a great chat.
I know. Oh my God, I've been dying to catch up with you. So much so.
This podcast is all about wellness on the inside and out, and I'm asking people about how they practice self-care and how important it is to their lives.
It is the one driving force of my life now. It's like it's the one thing. It's not money, it's not what I look like, it's do I feel well and am I well every day?
It's so priceless, isn't
it? Oh my God, there's no amount of money in the world can buy it. Like, as you know yourself, you just can't put a price on it. It's so crucial and so important. And it's my biggest motivator now is to do whatever I can do to feel well and feel healthy. I'm not really motivated anymore by what my CV looks like. I'm motivated by, is my lifestyle conducive to me feeling good?
And this is something that I've been thinking about a lot recently, is perception and the perception of yourself. And like you said, like, if I'm not well, it doesn't matter about my job. And over the last year, I've really concentrated on myself. Yeah. I was away from work. I had a job that I wasn't really that happy in. Mm-hmm. And I was very worried about that before I got sick. And it kind of consumed me. And I was worried about what I'd do next. And then I had to take a year off work. Yeah. And work on myself. And then towards the end of my treatment journey, and I was getting ready to come back to work, my job got in touch with me and said, we have this new role that we want you to do. And it was my dream job and I got it. And I just started thinking a lot about, whoa, I went away and I worked on myself for a year. Mm-hmm. And I was obviously putting out a different vibe. I was showing people that I was stronger, more mature. Yeah. And then all of a sudden I got this job. I don't think it was a coincidence.
I don't think so either. And I think a huge part of that was you being willing to own your vulnerability. And you were very vocal and open about saying, you know, I'm going through this really hard time. It's a physical weakening of your body, but in no way compromised your actual strength as a human being. And I think when it comes to jobs, more and more, we used to feel under pressure to be perfectly formed, whole human beings who don't feel any stress or don't have any illnesses. You know, you'd be afraid to go into a job interview being anything less than perfect. And now I think, like, honourable employers and companies appreciate and respect that people will go through all kinds of things, and they can be invaluable as a colleague or whatever, in spite of their struggles. And actually they bring, you know, I used to feel like I could never really vocalise, I actually kind of anxious sometimes in job stuff, and now I'm like, well, I've written a book about it, so you can't really avoid it. Mm-hmm. But yes, I do struggle with anxiety, but I'm also going to be brilliant in this job.
Yeah, you know? And like, that kind of life experience can bring so much to a role, can't it?
It brings so much more, and that awareness and to like have learned a lot about yourself and dug deep is more than any internship could ever give you, I think.
I want to talk a little bit about 2014. Like, that was a huge year for you. Do you think that you have to hit rock bottom to change? Or would you even describe that time as rock bottom?
I had to clear out all my emails a while ago and I had no space for some reason. And I had found this email that I'd written to myself in 2014 about what I felt like for me at the time was hitting my rock bottom, and how J.K. Rowling had said rock bottom was the solid foundation on which she built her whole life, which was just, I remember at the time being like, okay, if you feel like, it's obviously always relative to you, and I feel a bit stupid sometimes saying my rock bottom was just that I was so crippled with anxiety because people were going through far worse. Do you know what I mean? And I had a great life on paper, but for me, I became very mentally unwell, and my anxiety was so bad that I wasn't able to leave the house, and I just didn't know where I had gone. I didn't know if I would come back to myself. And I was so frightened all the time and crying and just probably really depressed as well as a sort of a side effect of the anxiety. And I sat there on my bedroom floor. And I spent a lot of time alone because I wasn't working. And I'd moved out, so I didn't have any family around me unless I went home to them. And everyone else was in work. My boyfriend, now husband, was in work as well. So like a lot of time just staring at the four walls and feeling like, where have I gone? Where is that person gone? And feeling like I hit rock bottom. And I just sort of started writing. It was like there was another voice inside me that had to guide me through. Mm-hmm. You know, it was like, you know, in Eat, Pray, Love, I don't know if you've read that, and she writes to herself and she's like, you cannot tire me out. You cannot exhaust me. I am always there for you. And it's just you, yourself.
Wow.
And it was just so powerful for me to be like, I'm just going to write the words and I'm going to say, you're going to get through this, even though I felt like I was falling apart. And it's such a powerful moment to know that you can go to those depths and not be scared of it either, you know. And actually, once you're there and you're familiar with it, you're like, you could handle that now. You can handle anything.
And was it very hard for you to say it out loud? Like, what I'm saying is, like, do you think that you could have kept putting the plaster on, or was it had it just come to a point where you just couldn't continue?
Yeah, well, it all kind of came to a head very quickly. I think what happened to me was that I was stressed out. I wasn't happy. And I have such a sensitive body that my body will always communicate with me if something's not right. Like, I'll always know. I hope I'll always know, because I'm very in tune with myself. And it was probably a couple of things. Like, I moved out of my parents' home and in with Barry. And at the same time, I changed jobs and I really didn't like the new job. But I think also I had an awful lot of anxiety as a kid without realizing it. It was always, I didn't feel well in my tummy. And I kind of feel now, retrospectively, like perhaps leaving my family home, where I was such a literal comfort zone for me, threw up a lot of childhood anxieties that I hadn't addressed yet. And then you add into that the stress of thinking I was going to go for this job that was going to be amazing. And for me, I was like, what have you done, you idiot? I was so happy in my previous role. And at the time, I was so driven by getting that next notch on the CV or whatever, that I wasn't thinking, well, you're actually loving your job right now. You can just be cozy in it for a while and enjoy having some money and enjoy there not being so much pressure on you. You don't need to constantly push yourself. But at the time, I didn't have that awareness. And the stress started to really erode away with me, and I didn't think anything of it. I thought I was just like, get a grip. People are handling so much worse. People are in really stressful jobs. It takes people like 3 months sometimes to settle into a new job. But my body was just like, mm-mm. So I got really sick in my stomach. Again, that was how it manifested for me. And it got worse and worse, to the point that, and this is just mad, I feel stupid even saying it, but I was so worn out mentally that I convinced myself that I had ovarian cancer, because I was Googling. And this is like, I feel such an insult to people who've been through it, like yourself. But I was like, there's something wrong with me. There's something wrong with me. I had all the symptoms. You know, if you go on Google, it'll tell you have whatever you think you have. And I remember Googling it and having all these pains, and it just was so crippling. And I came up with an article, and I was like, that sounds a lot like ovarian cancer. And I said it to Barry, and he's like, don't be ridiculous. I'm like, how do you know I don't have ovarian cancer? And I didn't have ovarian cancer. That was a turning point for me, where yeah. I had a panic attack. I couldn't sleep that night. And so for me to know what you've gone through, it's just like, oh my God, you're just like such
but
an inspiration.
The same for me though. The worst day of my life was not the day that I found out I had cancer. It was the Saturday previous to it, when I Googled breast cancer.
Yeah.
And I was told 5 days later that I had cancer, and that conversation was 1,000 times less scary than what I read online.
Yeah.
And it's absolutely terrifying what you can read online.
I know. I can't imagine, you know, to actually get the diagnosis then. But for me, I was so fragile in my mind that you could have told me I had anything and I would have just, it was like I was just at the edge of the mountain. I just needed one flick and I was falling down the hill, you know. So for me, it was just, and I even convinced myself I was allergic to tap water, because I thought something is making me sick. And because I'd moved from the north side to the south side, I was like, maybe there's something in the water over here. And you believe it, because you're trying so desperately to blame something tangible rather than blame the fact that I just wasn't coping, because I just wasn't coping.
Yeah, because it's almost easier for it to be a thing than oh my God, I've got a huge mountain to climb within myself to deal with this.
I felt like it was easier for me. It would have been easier for me at the time, I thought, to say, this is what it is, this has happened to me. Whereas when it comes to mental health and things go wrong, you feel like you've done this to yourself. So it's very hard to not be then like, get a grip, you're so weak, what are you like, you know, you have no reason to feel this way, people are going to think you're an idiot, and like, how dare you be falling apart at the seams when you've I felt like I had no right to.
Yeah.
And all that made it worse, you know. And oh my God, I'm so lucky that I didn't have, obviously have ovarian cancer, but it was just a time in my life where I needed to fall apart, and I needed then to realize that that was necessary and that that was okay. But it was, my body was like, this is a crippling anxiety, but I was like, no, it's this. I was looking for anything. And eventually when I said, do you know what, I think actually it's the job, I felt such shame by saying, I actually don't think I can go back into work, because people all the time, all my friends are handling such severe stress in work, and they go in and they handle it. And I was like, well, I just can't. And it was so hard for me to admit that. And it was so hard to admit it to my boyfriend, who, because we'd only been going out not that long, and you know, I was this full of confidence, you know, going here, there, everywhere, out for dinner, traveling. And suddenly I was this complete heap on the floor. And I felt, I think I was 25 at the time, I felt also bad on my family. Like, you know, I've just flown the coop. I should be able to handle myself. And here I am coming back underneath my mom's wing, needing her to literally dry my eyes at night. Because I was like, I felt, and I used to always say this, when I was trying to think about, like, why do I find this anxiety thing so hard? And I used to say to my mom, it was like I was born with a broken wing. And that just sounds so dramatic, but like, I really believed that this was something not right. I've always been frightened of things that other people aren't afraid of. When everyone was going on J1s, I was like, I don't think I can, because I have to, like, I could have, but I didn't want to go. I was terrified. So I'd always find these excuses to support my narrative that was staying in my comfort zone.
Yeah.
And then I got to the point where I was like, my life is not going to be what I want it to be if I keep denying the fact that I find this difficult. And my life has changed infinitely for the better since I did.
Breast cancer, to me, like, what I thought it was the worst thing that had ever happened in my life. Like, I was so devastated when I got the diagnosis, and it's only now that it's a year later, so much has changed. I've learned so much about myself that I feel okay to say out loud it's one of the best things that ever happened to me. Do you feel the same?
I do. I definitely do. And For so long, you know, my friends say, oh, well, you've gotten a best-selling book out of it, and, you know, isn't that great? And I would have been like, yeah, but I just did not want to go through that year of, you know, not being able to function. I now feel like it was meant to happen, and I was meant to kind of have a breakdown, and that's the path. I kind of believe in that sort of, you're on a path or whatever. But I still find it hard to be like, that was great.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, Jesus, like, it's just, like, I imagine it's a million times worse for something like breast cancer. But I guess when you come out the other side of it and you realize your strength, that is something you could never have known until you went through something hard.
Yeah. And that's the thing. Like, it was rock bottom for me.
Yeah.
And I'm proud of myself that I felt positive, that I saw the light, and that, you know, I was able to keep going.
And I don't know how you did that. I don't think I would be able for that at all. And just to see you finding that little shred of light or positivity, and not only for yourself but inspiring, you know, the amount of people that you have inspired, I feel like I would crumble. And I guess you don't know, you just don't know until you're faced with the situation.
Yeah, but you're the same. Like, you've inspired me, and talking about anxiety and confidence, and it's like conversations that we need to have. And I do feel like you can keep pushing your problems down, and it's just not healthy for you on the inside.
No.
Tell me a little bit about your books, because they're amazing.
Thank you.
And you must be so proud of yourself.
I am, and actually only from the second book coming out am I able to say, do you know what, I am really proud of myself, and I'm really proud of the content. I think I get messages probably every day from people I don't know saying that this book has changed my life, and sometimes I get this overwhelming feeling of, oh God, you're a fraud, and they'll find out that you've no right to be saying any of these things. And you know, that's just the imposter syndrome perfectionism thing happening to me. And actually yesterday I was walking in the street and this lovely woman tapped me on the shoulder, and I thought I dropped something, and she turned around and she was like, I just will regret it if I don't say this to you, I'm such a big fan. And I was like, oh my God,
wow.
I'm nobody, don't be ridiculous. And she told me her story of that she had really bad anxiety, and then she said that when she was 13 she was homeless, and when she was 14 she had a baby, and now she's working for a big bank, and she's like the most beautiful girl. And I was like, oh my God, you have been through some real shit. Can I say shit? You've been through some real shit. I felt like, how dare I be writing about these things? But if what I'm writing is articulating things that people experience in different ways and it's impacting positively, then that's my goal. You know, I can't everyone will have a worse story. And I don't want to say, I don't like sort of saying, oh, I had such a terrible time, but I did. But it's always relative to you and relative to your experience. But I'm really proud now. And to get that response from people is just, I never get used to it. And it's the best gift in the world.
And like sometimes I get messages from people and they literally stop me in my tracks.
Oh, yeah.
And then I think about the messages for the whole day.
Yeah.
And I think that's such a positive side of social media.
I agree. Yeah. I think social media has always been a bit of a double-edged sword for me in that it allows for like things like perfectionism and social comparison, which I know we'll talk about in a minute. But then the flip side of it is me and you being able to connect, you know, on social media, and people being able to read the books, or people being able to follow you and see, okay, I'm not alone in this. It can be so powerful if we just focus on the positive. So it's kind of, you have to take the good with the bad.
And talk to me about perfectionism, because I'm so interested in this at the moment.
Yeah, so I think perfectionism is just, we're only really starting to kind of scratch the surface of what an issue it is, especially for women. And for me, There's two kinds of perfectionism, okay? So it's not all bad. There's adaptive perfectionism and maladaptive perfectionism. And you can be an adaptive perfectionist and use your very high standards as sort of motivation. But maladaptive perfectionism is when you set a standard for yourself that simply does not exist. So even if you get 100%, you're like, well, I could have been better. And it's what you're actually hoping for isn't a real thing. So therefore, you're never actually, you never feel like proud or that you've achieved something. And I just feel that we focus so much of our lives on striving for something, striving for success. And then if you get it, and then your perfectionism is unhealthy and you think, well, that's nothing, whatever. What was the point of striving towards that the whole time? So I think it's so important to celebrate the small successes in life. You know, even if it's just I got up and I went to the gym, the small victories, and pat yourself on the back all the time. And just to watch when your perfectionism is veering towards, like, I have a whole chapter on it in the book, and there's so much research surrounding it about how much it can really erode away your sense of worth. So if you have your sense of worth based on things like how I perform at work or what I look like, you'll never be perfect enough for that. So it's about just readjusting and rethinking where you're getting that sense of self and sense of self-worth from. But perfectionism is a really hard one to kick. And like I say, it's not all bad. I think it's given me a lot of drive and motivation. But I need to, you know, I would have been thinking when the first book came out, oh God, like, you know, it was crap or it could have been better. And I'm like, do you know what? Done is good enough. And having made an impact, you know, I can't say I wouldn't have been delighted to be a bestseller of the whole world. But I was a bestseller in Ireland, and I resonated with a handful of people, then that's perfect for me.
Job done.
Yeah.
In terms of perfectionism for me, and I wonder if it's the same for other people who've been sick. So when I got sick and I decided to share my story online, it was very important for me to share the bad days.
Yes.
Because I didn't want anybody to turn around to their mum and say, oh my God, look at this girl, she's so positive, why can't you be like her? I didn't want to do that.
Yeah.
So I did put up my bad days, and that was very difficult for me because I'm quite a private person, but it was very important for me to balance it. But since I've gotten better, the way perfectionism is, I suppose, coming up for me again is that I'm trying to be the perfect cancer survivor now. So I'm trying to make sure my diet is absolutely perfect. I feel guilty if I don't exercise, and it's causing me stress inside. And I've started to see someone, and you know, I've had conversations about it, and it's really helped me realize, whoa, God, I'm being very hard on myself.
Very hard on yourself.
And it's not a good way to be on the inside.
No, it's very detrimental. And I think it's very important to realize that you are a human being, and people appreciate you having days. Like, I'd say it would have meant the world to someone who had cancer to see you have a good day and then see you have a bad day. So they don't feel like, wow, she's the perfect cancer patient and I'm not. She's handling well and I'm not. We all, like, life is in the grey, you know? And I think in your recovery now, it's very important to still have that honesty and authenticity. And, like, I actually get such a positive response from people when I, you know, everything I put up isn't curated and perfect. You know, obviously you'll put up, when you're going out, when I was on the Late Late Show, a lovely picture of the dress or whatever, but I'll also be like, God, I was really, really terrified. And people just appreciate you being real and authentic so much. So I think you can be as good, you can try your best and be as good as you can be for yourself, but don't do it for other people. You know, you're number one. And I think people will appreciate you saying, do you know, today I just wasn't arsed. I couldn't go to the gym. And thank God for that, because you can't be firing on all cylinders all the time. It's too much pressure.
Yeah, and I think especially when, you know, I've survived this and other people have survived cancer, and I just don't want them to look at me and go, oh my God, that's what I should be doing.
No,
you know,
I know,
so
yeah.
It's really important to be.
So just, you know, keep putting it out there, but be authentic on the days that you're like, you know, I feel like I'm really owning it today, I'm on top of it. That will be motivation for other people. On the days where you don't feel like you are, that will be reassurance for other people. Mm-hmm.
What heals you?
I would probably say I'm quite an outward person, but I charge inwardly. So spending time alone is very important. I have really learned the last while, and it's very difficult to say no and to listen to my gut and be like, you know what, I don't want to do that, and spend a lot of time like at home. Just, I'm a real comfort person. I'm a home bird. My idea of the perfect day is like at home, having brunch, going for a walk with the dog, just very, very, very simple. And so just penciling in lots of time that's just purely for me, and maybe I'll have a bath, or maybe I'll watch some crappy TV, and that is a kind of mindfulness for me as well. So it's just knowing when to lean into yourself and when to, you know, just, it's a balance act, because I'm freelance and I work for myself. It's not, I don't have like my work day starts and ends and then I'm done. I have very much work-life blend instead of a balance. So I just, it's a daily sort of check-in with yourself. Where mm-hmm. are you at? So if I have a lot on, you know, say for example, going and doing some public speaking, or that when I did the Late Late Show, I was, they're such huge things for me, you know. It takes so much adrenaline. I still get such bad anxiety about that stuff. I was like, I'm not making it up. Like, it's really hard. And I will be exhausted after it. So I would make sure to pencil in a couple of days where I've really pare back the diary as much as I can. So it's just kind of balance as you go, you know. Okay, yes, you might have a few mental days and they might be really stressful, but I'm going to take my foot off the gas after that, because I know it's a short term. I will never bring myself to the point of burning out again. And I see it happen to my friends all over the place, where they're just pushing, 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 expecting more and more of themselves. And then they start to have panic attacks, they start mm-hmm. to have anxiety, they get sick. And I just have that awareness now. I think, but I think you do have to kind of go through something difficult to know where your limit is. And knowing your limit is huge for me. But other things that heal me, I suppose, just really simple stuff. Like, I just go and just spending time with people, like just being with my husband and my dog, and, you know, going for walks, and, you know, meeting up with my friends who have just had babies. And you're thinking, wow, like all the stress in the world, and here's this little angel who's just wants to be fed or cuddled, you know, kind of just getting a bit of perspective shifting is really good as well. And just getting out in nature, I find very healing. And just, yeah, just being really, I think the most healing thing you can do is just be really, really good to yourself. So I really do indulge. Like, I just went on my way here and bought myself some new fluffy pajamas from Penny's, and I'm going to curl up tonight, and I'm going to eat some chocolate and put on the telly. And like, that is pure indulgence.
Enjoy
and
the moment.
To me. Yeah.
You talk about, you know, saying no. And I've thought a lot, especially since I've had a baby, that, you know, about my to-do list.
Yeah.
And it was always Pia, Jamie, the housework, ironing, dinner, and I was never on it. I never featured on it. And it's only now that I've realized, whoa, I need to make an appointment with myself. Yeah. I need to chill out. But it's very difficult to do that. Like, how do you get the confidence to say no without feeling guilty?
Well, first of all, I don't have any kids, so I think I'm a lot, like, in that sense, I'm looking that it's only myself. I actually get to live a very selfish existence, and I'm sure I'll find it very challenging if and when I hopefully do have kids. But I think that people appreciate, no one questions me. If I just say, do you know what, I'm not going, I need a night in. Also, because I'm very vocal about how I feel, they're not like, well, what's wrong with her? It's like, well, sometimes Caroline just needs to take a step back. And I think it's the first time you do it, it's kind of hard. Or if you say, it's hard to say like, I don't want to go, because I just don't want to go. It's easier to be like, oh, I have to do this or I have to do that. But when you do it the first few times, it's difficult. And then people are just like, respect you. Like, you know, if you want to put yourself first, or like I say to Barry, I need like a bath. I'm going to go up myself and have an hour. Will you just mind yourself, whatever? And he'll be delighted. And I'll just go up and do my own thing and just absorb into myself. It just takes practice, I think. But I can imagine how difficult it is with, you know, if you're at home and you're on maternity leave and you have the baby to take care of, and then, you know, there's an expectation there that you're going to have the house clean and the ironing done and stuff. You know, I'm still very much on my own in that regard. So Barry's off at work and I'm at home, so I just, all I have is the dog. So once he gets walked, it's all about me then.
It's so funny. And what makes you happy? Like, I know you seem like a home bird, and it's so funny, I chatted to Darren Garrahy last week, and she's the same, and I think I'm the same, and I think I must attract people like that.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I just love my own company, and sometimes I just don't answer my phone for a few days because I'm just like, oh, I just love just being by myself.
I know, and I think it's so important. I think when you're younger you feel so much pressure to be like out and socializing all the time, but actually I restore myself by being alone, and then I can really enjoy being in other people's company. I think it's so important.
Do you feel like through your diet that you can make yourself feel better? So, you know, when I'm tired, I binge on like sugar and things like that, and then I start to feel guilty, and then I'm just a mess. But when I get up every day and do my best with my diet and eat loads of nutrients, I always feel like I feel better. Are you the same?
Yeah, and I think like the same goes for exercise. And I think what all of that comes back to is a feeling of being in control. And when we feel in control of ourselves, we feel good, and we all like to feel in control. And I think that's, diet is part of that as well. Like, once it doesn't go too far at the extreme where you're really punishing yourself if you have a cheat day or whatever. Mm-hmm. So, but on a very physical level, I've always had struggles with my tummy, and I know the foods that trigger me. And sometimes I'm just so worn out or exhausted that I'm going to pick up and start eating the dessert that's, I know, is going to irritate my tummy. And I'm like, well, you know this, and then you feel sick. And then Barry's like, why did you, you know, like, not giving out to me, but like, all you have to do is not eat those things and you won't feel sick. But you're just depleted of energy, and you're like, whatever, I'll do it. And I really feel it physically then if I let myself go. But when I'm being good, and it's all about organization as well, which I'm not very good at, about getting up, planning your meals, having nice food, I feel massive benefit from it. If my gut issues are kind of on the straight and narrow, my life is infinitely more enjoyable. But again, it's just hard to keep all the plates spinning all the time.
Absolutely.
You know, like, okay, I want to go to the gym 3 times a week if I can. Didn't go once this week. Went 4 times last week. That was a good week.
That's pretty impressive.
Yeah, or like, you know, get up and have a really healthy breakfast. And then it just starts to just fall apart as the day goes on, because you're just busy, or this convenience, you're at a meeting, you don't have time, and you go for the easy thing. And then you start every day again. You're like, I'm going to try today and be, you know, as good as I can be. I just think it's really important to maybe start small with like saying, okay, I'm going to plan like a week of healthy breakfast or something. Instead of, I just think it's not a good idea. It's not helpful if you're really berating yourself because you came home and you put your feet up and you had a takeaway.
Yeah, and that's what I try to do now is, you know, my doctor said to me, there's no diet for this cancer. Like, you just have to, you know, eat your 5 a day and drink 2 liters of water. So that's what I do. I'm not, you know, I'll still have a pizza, but I'll try to eat 5 a day, and I'm just hoping they balance each other out,
like,
you know?
I think they do. And I also think you have probably more awareness of eating well now, because you know how important your body is for healing. And like, if you, it's fuel, and if you're just putting crap in there all the time, you're not going to respond as well to, like, if you get a cold or if you get something wrong with you. And I know you'll be talking to amazing dietitian Orla about this, but I just, you can feel it firsthand. Like, if you, and it's especially from an anxiety and a mental health perspective, if my anxiety is really bad, I won't touch sugar or caffeine, because it's increasing the cortisol, which is the stress hormone. So it just, and people are sculling back the cappuccinos, wondering why they're feeling so on edge. Like, just take, that's low hanging fruit you don't need in your life. So I will, all my diet will kind of bend and flow depending on how I'm feeling. So like, if I'm having a completely anxiety free few days, I'll enjoy a Diet Coke or a cup of tea or something. But like, when I was going on the Late Late Show, and that was for me the scariest thing I'd ever done, wouldn't touch caffeine for like 3 days beforehand. So
okay, like, and you came across so cool on the Late Late. I can't believe that you were feeling other way.
I was so scared, because I think when it comes to something like the Late Late Show, if I'm being honest, a lot of people just watch it to be mean on Twitter. And I have been very lucky with my books that they've put me in the public eye to a certain extent, but I haven't been on the receiving end of any negative comments, and I really don't know if I'd be able to handle it. And I was afraid of, I'm almost afraid of putting myself out there and not being liked. I find that very hard, and it's something I'll probably explore in a third book. So I was like, here I am putting my head on the chopping board. If I say something stupid or if the wrong thing comes out of my mouth, you know, the trolls are there with their pitchforks ready on Twitter, and they just love to tear people apart, despite, even if you're doing something positive, like, you know, getting people talking about something. And like, I know that's so unimportant, but it's very hard not to let that stuff get to you. Mm-hmm. And I haven't been on the receiving end of it, like I say, but I was afraid I was putting myself into that arena where I would be, and how would I actually handle that?
And did you go looking for comments?
I didn't. So I turned my phone off until like the following, I didn't go on Twitter. I the next day I looked at my interactions on Twitter, but I didn't go and look at the hashtag. I didn't want to know. And then there was one tweet that someone sent me, and it was actually just funny. It was just such a classic example of someone being so misinformed. They were like, who's your one there with all the skin on show? I was like, first of all, a full-length sleeve dress and all that makeup. She looks like a reality star in inverted commas. And wow, what's she selling? And it was just so funny. I was like, if that's the worst, then that's fine. Mm-hmm. But like, people just...
Imagine sending a tweet like that without informing yourself about... like what the conversation was about.
People just put out some crazy stuff, don't they? And like even things like with like Ryan Tuberty, for example, like people are just destroy him. So like, mm-hmm, you're just aware of why you're going into this lion's den of people being ready to pounce. And I'm like, I very much avoid that. And, you know, I have so much respect for friends in the media who, like Louise O'Neill, for example, who has such valid, important things to say. But when you commit to an opinion, like something around maybe feminism, for example, as many people as there are supporting you, you're going to have people saying, you know, really nasty, negative things. And she's taught me a lot about just turning the phone off, like literally zoning out of things. And that helps, you know, those really practical things really help. But that's why I was nervous. And I was nervous because I feel like it's just a big platform, and it's just national, it's the late show.
But you must have gotten so many positive comments.
I did. And like, I know now that I've done it, I was like, oh, that was nothing. Why were you so mm-hmm, stressed? Like, everything becomes normalized to you. And then you're like, what was the big deal? But it was a massive deal to me when I think about the fact that in 2014, I wouldn't have been able to go meet my mom for a coffee without having a severe panic attack.
Wow. You've come so far.
Mentally, I have, you know. And so while someone else could go out on stage and host a show or whatever, you have to compare yourself now to yourself of a previous time. It's like, there's no point in... So social comparison, if I looked at someone else thinking, oh, they're such a brilliant speaker on TV and they can host this show and they can do that, and I'm like, I couldn't do that. There's no benefit to doing that. That's social comparison. What's far healthier and far more motivating is a thing called temporal comparison, which I talk about in both books, which is yourself today versus yourself another time. So if I just focus on myself and I think of myself in 2014, relative to my experience, I have come so far. But relative to someone else, maybe it doesn't look like I have, but that doesn't matter. So I just think that's so powerful.
It's amazing.
And so important.
Wow, you're so inspiring to me. I just think you're so incredible. I like, because I suppose we did a few junkets together like years ago when we were both in entertainment news, and then I saw you going out and working for yourself and going freelance and bringing out these books. I was like, wow, like even to do this podcast for me is terrifying because it's so hard to just take the first step,
I know,
isn't it?
Yeah, it's so hard to know that you've something to say and put yourself out there. But I find more often than not, people are very supportive, and they want, if you're talking about something important, like we're talking about wellness, or we're touching on subjects like, you know, having awareness of like cancer and people being sick or anxiety or mental health, mostly you will be met with support and encouragement. And I think a lot of the time things like Instagram can be a very supportive place, and you just have to zone out of anything negative and do it because you want to do it and because you believe you have something to say.
Because I asked my followers on Instagram what they'd like to hear us chatting about, and one girl said, how can I be more positive? You know, she just said she wakes up in the morning and she kind of just feels a bit negative and can't get into the positive space.
So I would first understand, like for me, if you're going to crack any problems like negativity or perfectionism or anxiety or confidence issues, you need to understand them at their most basic level. So why is negativity such a common thing for this person? And negativity is actually huge for all of us. We all have a negativity bias, and we're primed to go negative and focus on the negative things in our life. And the reason that's the case is because back in hunter-gatherer times, you needed to have 3 times as much awareness of negative things as you did good things, because a negative thing back then might literally have cost you your life and you might have gotten eaten by a lion. Mm-hmm. So it's in our DNA and it's in our like evolutionary history to be like really place a lot more emphasis on the negative, and that's from a survival perspective. So when you think negatively, you're actually in self-protection mode. So first of all, I think it's really important to understand that, and that you know, oh, all this sort of just be positive. That's all well and good saying, but negativity is actually a very important part of our life as well. So what something that helps me a lot with the negativity is to, I'm a big fan of CBT, so mm-hmm. that's cognitive behavioral psychology and cognitive behavioral therapy.
Mm-hmm.
And one exercise in particular is cognitive restructuring, and that takes you out of your own head. And I'm all about like exercises with pen and paper that make it about facts and less about what you think or you feel. So cognitive restructuring is essentially putting your thoughts on trial. So me saying, oh, I'm gonna go out in the Late Late Show and it's gonna be an absolute failure and I'm gonna be a disaster. Okay, is that a fact or is it an opinion? Is it based on any real evidence? So you write down the thoughts that you have, and then you write down, well, why, what is the supporting evidence to say that that's actually going to happen or that's true? So if she's waking up and she's thinking today is going to be a terrible day, what is this? Is it because the rest of the days were terrible? Is it an opinion or a fact that something bad is going to happen today? It has to be an opinion because she can't know the future. And it's putting it down on paper and having that helicopter view to be like, okay, and this is all what I think is going to happen, or this is where my mind is at. And then you rewrite more balanced, more actually realistic kind of counter argument to yourself. And it's just about constantly bringing your awareness into the positive as much as you can, because our default is negative. So you'll have to, so for say if you have one negative thought, you need to write out three positive thoughts, because it takes three times as many to balance that one negative.
Wow.
So it's just about understanding how your brain works mm-hmm. and accepting that, and that's very normal. And you know, I'm so good at being negative. I know I sound really positive now, but like, you know, with myself, when it comes to myself, I think of all the reasons not to do something. I think of all the reasons why something will go terribly wrong. I think of the worst case scenario, and I let that happen, and I let it get out of my system. And then I say, okay, now let's think about the positive things. Because if you try and shove positivity down your throat, it's not going to work. Mm. If you try and bury, if she has genuine concerns or worries or anxieties, and someone just says, don't be ridiculous, don't be silly, well, they're valid to her. And any concern you have is valid to you. So I think it's very important to give those concerns and negative thoughts a chance to sort of run out of steam. Let them out, and then come back with a more reasonable, rational, measured response.
My friend Julie, she's a doctor, and she said to me when I first got sick, she said, Georgie, what you should do is give yourself like 10 minutes a day or 20 minutes a day to just give in to the feelings that you have. And have that time and grieve for your previous life and get into it and cry and do all the things. And then, you know, you can move on. Yeah. But it is okay to be not okay for a time.
Exactly. And that's a very effective thing, like a worry period where you allow yourself time to worry, whatever it might be. And it means that if you let it all out, and then you're like, oh, okay, I've actually spent all that negative energy now, you can probably carry on and do something without feeling like it's weighing you down, or knowing, okay, I'm actually going to worry about that later because I have my worry schedule at 6 o'clock. I'm going to let all hell break loose mm-hmm. at 6 o'clock. So it actually takes the pressure off you the rest of the time. I think it's such a bad idea if you were forcing yourself to just constantly be positive and constantly ignoring the negatives. It would have eaten you up. So you had to allow yourself to be positive when you felt like you were able for it, and then allow the negatives to happen when they were there, because they are as valid, you know.
And what do you think, have you heard of the method of like thinking of three things you're grateful for on a daily
like
basis?
Yeah, gratitude thing. Yeah, I do admittedly find gratitude diary things, I mean, I start with the best of intention, then I just give up. But I feel in general in my life, I'm very much about gratitude. And I just have, one of my biggest anxieties now, and this must sound stupid, is that I feel like things are going too well for me. And like in terms of my health, my husband, I can't believe that he wants to be with me and that he loves me, and I'm waiting for him to realize that I'm a terrible person or something and leave me, or you know. And we have our house, and I feel so unbelievably blessed and fortunate that my fear is that it'll be taken away from me or something.
Yeah, it's
so,
about trying so hard to just enjoy the moment.
Yeah. And like, so that makes me really appreciate the small things. And then like that brings me back to, you know, I could say my goal is to win a Pulitzer Prize or something. No, my goal is to keep living life the way I am right now, because I just can't imagine it gets better.
I left my baby last week. I went to Madrid for the weekend, and I was sitting on the airplane and I was like in a complete state internally. I was like, why am I leaving her? I've worked all week. I want to spend, you know, the weekend with her. And I'd got myself into such a state that I was like, okay, I need to do something to try manage this. So I just did some deep breathing for about 15 minutes, and it really just calmed my mind down. And if you're feeling anxious, like, what do you do to get yourself out of it?
So breathing is a massive thing, and I have a chapter in the first book called Bullshit Free Breathing, because I know a lot of people roll their eyes and like, oh well, if I could just breathe that would make everything go away. But it actually, it's, you know, scientifically proven that when we focus on our breathing over time and we practice it, it eventually will lower that sort of stress level. You'll be able to cope. So even taking 3 to 5 minutes, if you're in a very sticky situation or you're feeling very overwhelmed, whatever you think, it will calm you down, so you can't deny it. But then I also feel that, like, for me, if I go back to the Late Late Show, which was just a very recent example of me feeling so anxious, and people were like, well, what can you do to make yourself feel better in the short term? And I was like, you know what? I'm just not going to feel better until this is done, if it's something like that. And I was like, I just need to know you're going to get through it. It's going to be fine. And then as soon as it was done, I didn't feel the anxiety anymore. So sometimes you have to roll with it as well. So maybe it was going to be waiting till your environment changed. So if you were on the plane freaking out, maybe you would have, the breathing obviously helped. But when you're in a different environment and you had time to reflect, it would have changed for you. So I would be big into breathing, and then also not resisting the anxiety. And that's, so owning it is the title of my first book, and that was my biggest learning. And I think it's owning that you're not feeling so good right now, and knowing that you will come out of it again, but stop trying so hard to run away from it, because the more you try and resist something negative in your life, the bigger it gets in spite of that.
Talk to me about your wedding. Obviously, yeah. I follow you on Instagram. I was like glued. You know, when you know someone's getting married, you're like, I can't wait to see the photos.
I don't know how many times I went back and looked at your wedding dress photo, because I was like, can I just go and get Georgie's dress? So would that be really mean of me to do? So yeah, the wedding was really good for me as a challenge in terms of like not losing the head. And I kind of thought that like maybe I'd get really anxious about it, but I was never more calm in my entire life, because I didn't put myself under pressure for it to be the best day ever. Mm. I just said, I'm going to have a great time. It's going to be lovely. Probably going to be a little bit nervous, and that's okay. And I was just completely at ease. And obviously it helped that I was marrying someone that made me feel very at ease as well.
That's so true though. Like if you don't build something up and have this kind of picture in your head of what it's going to be like, then you can't be disappointed.
Yeah,
then.
Like I'm very realistic as well about that stuff. And like, I guess I get so much satisfaction from my work, and I think that helps a lot to keep you from turning the wedding into something that really defines you for a whole year. So it was just another thing that I was organising, but it was always a lovely distraction from work. It was never, oh God, this has to be perfect, because I know too much about perfectionism to know what, like, no one cares. You know, we all have so many weddings to go to every year. People are so happy for you and want to come and have a lovely time. No one is going to notice if that, you know, rose is vintage or not, you know, if that.
And if they care, they shouldn't be at your wedding.
Exactly. And the thing is, you don't care on the day either. Like, I'd done loads of things. Like, I bought all these confetti filled balloons, and then we couldn't get any helium for them. And I was like, I don't care. Like, if I start stressing about that now, what is the actual point? Where is it going to get me? And I just went into it very much with that awareness. There is just no point. And it goes for everything in life. Focus your energy on what you can control and let go of the rest.
And do you have a standout moment from the day that you kind of think about often?
God, I don't know if there was one moment. It was really, actually felt like quite a long day. You know, I was very present. The ceremony, I think, was, I was very much in the moment. I was just so happy. I was looking around, listening to lovely readings and seeing people that I love. And I felt like so rooted to the ground, that the spot that I was in, like I wasn't thinking about anywhere else or being anywhere else. And I just felt really present and mindful and really grateful in that moment. And that was just, time kind of slowed down at that point.
Yeah, it's an amazing day, and I was the same. And I in the church, I was looking at Jamie's family and my family, and it's just the most beautiful moment. Yeah. I think, you know, when you see the person you're going to marry standing at the top of the church, it was just so gorgeous. Have you heard me talking about God Winks?
No.
So God Winks. So obviously Oprah is a huge part of my journey over the last year, and her book really helped me. In her book, she talks about God winks and glory, glory, hallelujah moments.
Okay.
And I suppose God winks happen all the time, but I think, you know, it's about stopping to appreciate the moment. Mm-hmm. And I've had so many God winks this summer.
So like where God winks at you?
Yeah, so just like where everything like just lines up perfectly and you go, wow, perfect moment. I'm just going to take a second to just enjoy it. When was your last God wink?
Oh my God. things like really simple, just like waking up last Saturday morning and feeling a sense of achievement and a sense of, from having done the Late Late Show, and a sense of just synergy in life of like, I had felt the fear and I did it anyway, and I felt like at this very sort of solid level of feeling like proud of myself and like, yes, I still have loads to learn. I just felt like in a really nice place and just had a gorgeous breakfast with Barry and our dog Bear in bed, and I just felt like the plan, like you say, like the stars kind of aligned and that's where I was meant to be. And it was just, yeah, it's probably not that much of a big moment, but the small ones, you know.
You're an absolute inspiration to me. I'm full of admiration for you, and your books are brilliant. And so I cannot wait to see what you're going to do next.
I can't believe you're saying that you're full of admiration for me, because look, I'm sitting opposite you and you have just kicked cancer's arse, and I don't know if I could ever do that. And you are owning it, and you have been an inspiration to so many people. And you know what? If we're both positively impacting people, isn't that great?
Amazing. Thanks for listening to the Good Glow podcast. Please subscribe so you can be the first to hear about new episodes. And if you enjoyed the podcast, please leave a review. You can check out thegoodglow.ie for more on my story and follow me on Instagram @GeorgieJCrawford.